everyone. Thank you so much for tuning into Advertising Week's Great Minds, People and Culture podcast. I'm your host, Brenna Kinsey, Executive Vice President of Advertising Week and Emerald. On today's episode, we're honored to have Leah Garces, the CEO and President of Mercy for Animals, leading an organization that constantly challenges powerful interests in the agriculture industry is no small feat, and Leah's expertise in navigating these challenges is invaluable. Throughout her tenure, she has employed various strategies to maintain team morale and motivation, even in the face of criticism or backlash. As we dive into her experiences, Leah will share insights into leading through difficult situations and effectively communicating Mercy for Animals' mission to the public, especially when met with skepticism or opposition. With the organization's 25th anniversary approaching, Leah will also discuss the significance of this milestone and how MFA plans to celebrate it. Leah, thank you so much for making the time for us. Mercy for Animals is an organization that is very near and dear to my heart, and I'm so honored to have you on the podcast.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for being such a passionate Mercy for Animals supporter. We're so grateful.
My pleasure. MFA is a nonprofit that is often at odds with powerful interests in the agriculture industry. Can you please share with us why that is?
Well, we are very much challenging the status quo. We're asking people to re-examine their values and the norms of society. And we're also up against very big power structures that are held in place within our economy, within our government. So it's a challenging piece of work for sure.
I say this to my friends often, food is very political. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think it can be political. It can also be unifying. So I don't think it needs to be political. Everybody likes good food. Let's just start there. Like, serve people great food and no one is going to think of it as political. It's only political when you start judging people. And nobody likes to be judged. So that's a point of which you need to, when you engage with folks over food, my motto is like great food and no judgment. That's the great way to engage people in the path that we're on.
And how do you, as a CEO of an organization like MFA, navigate the challenges while leading your team of the powerful interest in the agriculture industry and being at odds with them? How do you navigate that?
Yeah, I think there's something very important to me as a leader, which is building alliances, especially unlikely allies. So what I try to do is both identify like-minded organizations and individuals and groups that we can really collaborate with to amplify our impact. We collaborate with them to amplify our messages. We share resources. We collectively advocate for change. And there's a strength in numbers that is a powerful force. We also work with those you wouldn't expect us to work with. And that is a really powerful tool as well. And I find that very rewarding to be curious about people who you wouldn't think would care about this issue. And for example, factory farmers themselves, we've found powerful allegiances with factory farmers who don't want to be doing this work, but are in so much debt, they can't get out of factory farming. And so they're essentially indentured servants. And they also think the system is unjust and unfair and cruel, but they're stuck. Another really powerful tool that we use to navigate the challenges when leading is really harnessing public opinion and media. I think leveraging the power of public opinion and media just can't be underestimated. We use all the traditional channels. We also use social media channels to disseminate information, to mobilize people, hold institutions accountable. Really what we're trying to do with this is punch above our weight. So we might do a very powerful undercover investigation that's shocking. And so it gets lots of media coverage and we're punching above our weight because if we had to pay for that advertisement of exposure of our message, it would cost too much money. We also have super passionate supporters. And I like to say that the other side will always have more money than us, but they will never have as much passion and conviction. And so we need to harness the power of that passion and conviction to punch above our weight and be heard.
Can you share an example of a particular difficult situation your organization faced due to its advocacy work and how you approach leading through it?
Yeah, I mean, all the work we do is really hard. I was trying to think of an actual example, but the main struggle we have is that the progress is so slow. The work, we are working towards a world where animals are protected and free and respected, and we're working on these tiny incremental pieces. So the work is very hard and victories are few and far between. And so this is why we really focus on morale and how to stay motivated. We need to really foster resilience in our organization because we face many setbacks, many failures. And when we have a mindset of resilience, we can reframe failures as data, information on how to do better next time. But you need to have that resilient and healthy team to be able to reframe.
You mentioned how the progress is slow, but you have to stay consistent and be patient with it. Mercy for Animals is celebrating its 25th anniversary on April 20th. Can you please share with us why that's a significant milestone and how the organization is planning on celebrating it?
Oh, it's going to be like vegan prom, essentially. It's going to be so fun. It's our 25th year of being an organization that protects farmed animals. We were started by a high schooler in rural Ohio, and we've grown and grown to be an international organization advocating for farmed animals all over the world. And it's something where we want to pause and celebrate. I think it's very important to pause and celebrate. That definitely creates resilience when we can pause and remember our victories and sink into our progress. And so this will be a moment in which we pause and think, where were we 25 years ago? Where were farmed animals? Where were they even 10 years ago too? And look how much we have accomplished together as a community. And then thinking forward, what are the next 25 years look like? What can we do as a community? It's going to be fabulous. We have like 120 celebrities confirmed to come. There's going to be over 550 guests. We're going to have incredible food, the best vegan food you will ever have. We have musical performances. We have all these fun activations, even like an after party with like a pizza truck and a makeup activation. It's going to be so fun. And we need that. We need that to kind of celebrate the joy of this work and the good work we're doing to make the world a more compassionate place.
While it will be a star-studded event, I have attended galas in the past for Mercy for Animals. The true heroes and the true celebration and the true people that I admire the most are those who are doing the undercover investigation. I want to ask you, Leah, can you please explain to our listeners what agriculture gag is and how these undercover investigations are exposing what is happening to our food system?
Yeah, unfortunately, the way the industry is set up is it's out of sight, out of mind, intentionally. It's kept behind closed doors, and the animals and the torturous circumstances they're living in, they are locked away so that we do not think or see them. You cannot walk up to a farm and say, "Can I have a tour?" They will not let you in. They will be afraid of you taking pictures because what is inside is morally unacceptable to most people. And what are undercover, and because of that lack of access and that lack of public accountability, our investigators go in undercover simply to gather footage of what are the normal practices in this industry. And it is always shocking. We find all kinds of cruelties, which are unbearable for most people to watch, but we have to bear witness to this because otherwise they'll say it's not happening. There's no reason for us to change. And so our job is to bear witness and expose these cruelties to force change on the industry.
And do you agree that that footage is even more important to someone who is not vegan? Because I think you have to actually see where your food is coming from in order to appreciate the work that you and organizations like Mercy for Animals is doing.
I think it's really important to everyone, but I think if you're choosing to consume animals, it's important for you to understand what their lives are like before you put them in your mouth. And a lot of people have cognitive dissonance where they know this, but they know how animals are treated, but they put it to one side. It's a lesser priority. And so by putting the footage out there, it helps move it up in the prioritization list of a person's choices that they're making at the supermarket.
you and people in your organization, when you all see these undercover investigations, I know what is actually released is even a mild version of what you witness and what the undercover investigations witness. How do you continue to move forward? How do you see the sadness and see all the things that are happening to both the animals and the people who actually are working in these farms who don't want to work there, but they're stuck, like you mentioned before? How do you move past what you see and still strive to move forward, knowing and understanding that the impact you're making is still smaller than what you wish it was making, but something that you need to continue to do?
We really have to foster in ourselves and our organizational culture two things: resilience and adaptability. And I'll say first with resilience, I think it's critical that we, and this is, I've actually given a TEDx talk on this subject, because how do you make progress? How do you stay motivated when progress is slow, when the issue is so difficult? And one of the most important things I've learned is to not intertwine the magnitude of a task with my worth. And understand that even being present, even bearing witness, even though it might not move an issue forward in that moment, it's better than that pig or chicken suffering in silence and no one even witnessing their suffering. And so even your presence and your efforts, they bring value. And there's actually an ancient Jewish teaching from the Talmud that says, don't be daunted by the enormity of the world's grief. Do justly now. Love mercy now, walk humbly now. You're not obligated to complete the task, but neither are you free to abandon it. And that really is important to me, to feel like I am not obligated to finish this, but I can't look away either. And in that is wrapped to not let perfection be the enemy of progress, to just keep showing up, keep moving forward, and trust in your value. And as a second part of that is, it's really important for our team members and for me and for our investigators to experience joy. Joy is critical. And as an activist, we often deny ourselves joy because, you know, we feel the animals are suffering. We can't possibly be prioritizing our joy. That doesn't, you know, add up. But joy is critical for the longevity of this work. And one suggestion that I have is to try and have direct contact with the change you're trying to make. So for me, I'm trying to create a compassionate world where animals are living a joyful, free life. But if I only expose myself to their suffering, which is what I've done most of my life, where I see suffering in undercover investigations through firsthand on videos and advocacy materials, I lose motivation. It's just soul crushing. And so I think it's important not to lose touch with that positive place that we're aiming for, the very vision that motivates you. And so I try to visit farm animal sanctuaries, and I even rescued a chicken, who brought me incredible joy over a year. And at the very least, you know, look at happy animals on Instagram if you need a boost.
I love that. I obviously adopted my dog. I visit sanctuaries closer to where I am right now, which I love. But I sometimes feel myself overwhelmed with how much more work there is to do. And I'm sure your team obviously feels that in such a higher magnitude than I do. What strategies do you employ to maintain morale and motivation among your team members, especially when faced with criticism and backlash from the proponents of animal agriculture?
There's probably three things we do. One of them is to just remind ourselves and reinforce our shared values and mission. We're here to create a kinder world for animals. Our bosses are no one else but the pigs, chickens, cows, and fish that they literally can't speak up for themselves. We are their voice. And we remind team members of the organization's core values and mission. We emphasize the importance of the work we're doing and the positive impact it has on animals who don't have anyone else. And we as a community are special because of that. And because we are committed and united by this cause, that gives us meaning. And in that is a kind of sub-strategy that's important, which is fostering a sense of community and belonging. And by reinforcing a sense of purpose and belonging, you can really help shape morale and motivation. I think you also people need to feel like they're winning. So it's really critical that we just don't always look at all the bad in the world, but we celebrate, which is what our gala is all about. We celebrate achievements and milestones, longevity, and both individuals and organizations. And we acknowledge hard work and dedication, contributions, not just the actual outcomes, but just the the sheer dedication and passion. And finally, really important to maintaining morale and motivation is practicing self-care. We really prioritize self-care and well-being with the challenging circumstances we work under. It's very important that leadership exemplifies this. It's not okay for me to say everybody needs to have self-care and I am like a mess and stressed and like not ever taking vacation. Then no one else will. Culture of self-care starts at the top. No one else will do it unless they see their leadership doing it. So promoting healthy work-life balances. We have very good vacation time. We actually have sabbaticals and we provide resources for managing stress and burnout. Taking care of oneself is essential for maintaining motivation and resilience in the long run.
And what you mentioned before as well, celebrating the wins, however small they may seem while you're in them. And outside of the gala, how do you and your team celebrate those wins?
We have monthly calls in which we are sharing our progress as a global team. So there's 180 people that get on a call. That's one example of where every region is celebrating and sharing the progress we've made. And at the end, we have it's very cute. We have a love bubble in which we give shout outs to people and people can call out the team members and just celebrate team members. So that's one example. But I think that the gala is a really big event and we, you know, are really looking forward to that. It's going to be a fun party.
And you mentioned the need for self-care, especially as you're trying to motivate your team to have self-care while doing this very important and difficult work. Outside of taking vacation time and having a work-life balance, what are some things you're doing to maintain the balance and protect your energy?
Well, I have a daily practice that I'm super committed to, and this includes daily exercise of some kind, a mix of either running, yoga, or strength training, meditation. And then I have mantras that are, you know, exhibiting who I want to be that day. And then I prioritize sleep as well. And when things get hectic, I do fall out and I see that I fall out of these practices. I immediately notice my lack of clarity, my lack of focus, my lack of ability to lead well, it deteriorates. So, and then I kind of go back and go, okay, back to the practices that give me some spaciousness. And even if I have to shorten this practice, it's better than not doing it at all. And so returning to a simple practice that works best for you, for me, that's the morning. I kind of have between 7 a.m. and 8:30 to kind of get that done. And believe it or not, I spend an hour and a half every day on self-care and getting myself mentally, spiritually ready for the day.
I love that. And as a leader, how do you prioritize the well-being of your team?
There are a lot of ways we do this, but we have sabbaticals that are laid out for team members. And we have the ability to go on vacation. I can't remember the exact time. It's so much that people don't even take it all. We also have something called Team Care Day, where once a month at Mercy for Animals, we're closed. It's the second Friday of every month, where it's your time to do whatever you need to reset. And there's no meetings allowed. There's no work allowed. And so really trying to foster a self-care culture. And again, it's really important that I exemplify that other leaders exemplify that, because without that, people are not going to feel they have the permission to do it.
100%. How do you balance the need for transparency and accountability with the potential risks of exposing your organization to further scrutiny or criticism? Do your employees get trolled online? Do you have to take extra steps to keep them protected? How are you keeping your undercover investigators protected?
Yeah, our undercover investigations, their investigators are completely confidential. I don't even know their real names. So only a very limited number of people know who they are. And we very much protect them. Yes, and our team members do get trolled sometimes, and we have to coach on how to respond to that. And I get trolled for sure. And I think that for me, there's a couple of rules that I try to follow, which is be proactive and transparent. So unless someone is just being a real jerk, but if there's something worth engaging with, some truth or some curiosity that I can see within it, it's, you know, being proactive, disclosing information that's relevant, that answers the questions. And I think transparency builds trust and credibility, even if it does entail some risk. So we have to balance the risk and the credibility we're trying to build. But you need to balance transparency with privacy. And that's where we often have to make a decision. We're not responding because this is a private matter. So we respect individuals' privacy rights, confidentiality, safety concerns when responding, especially when it comes to sensitive or personal information. We have an amazing legal team and an amazing people operations team. And I highly rely on them. I seek legal and ethical guidance from our legal and ethical teams that can help us comply with laws, do the consistent thing across, you know, our organization. I really rely on these team members to guide me.
You shared a lot of great tips for leadership that are applicable to even for-profit industries that are not similar to yours. What advice would you offer to others in leadership positions who are striving to maintain their own well-being while advocating for causes that they are deeply passionate about?
It's a great question. I think it really starts with your own well-being and self-worth. As a leader, you have to believe that you're worthy of spaciousness and care. And I used to really think this was a cliche, but having gotten right to the edge of burnout several times, it comes down to me believing I am worthy of spaciousness. I am worthy of happiness. And when I prioritize happiness and spaciousness, it leads to me having a clear mind and leading with ease. And that makes me a better leader. I'm less reactive, I'm less stressed, I'm able to handle complex problems easily. I do a lot of work to get there. It is not in my nature to be at ease or spacious. My nature is to fill up every possible space with things and to be driving really hard. And so I do a lot of work, from breath work to yoga, meditation, journaling, to really reflect on what is blocking me from reaching my higher potential. And 9 times out of 10, it's me not believing I'm worthy of the same kind of compassion, respect, and love that I'm trying to achieve for animals, which is so ironic. I remember a therapist once said to me, like, how ironic, do you hear yourself? You think you're not worthy of, you know, happiness and spaciousness and care, and you're fighting for another species for that, and you don't think you're worthy. And that is so typical of activists in this space, very typical. And maybe for all people working for social justice, because they're thinking, oh, everyone's suffering, I don't deserve it. But it's if you can't achieve it for yourself, how could you possibly imagine achieving it for the world outside? And so without that foundation of self-belief and worth, you constantly are seeking external validation and approval, and you'll burn out, you'll fail, especially in a job where you're pushing boundaries and challenging norms. You are never going to get external validation. You're never going to get it. You're always going to get people trying to push you back down. And so you've got to be really strong in your self-belief. You need to believe, I am enough. I am creating a change in the world that I'm passionate about, and I am important to that cause in my own unique way, different than everybody else and different what everybody's expecting me to do. So it's very important that it starts with your own well-being, your own self-worth.
That's so beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. And as we wrap up, what advice would you give to other leaders who are leading organizations that are challenging established industries and societal norms?
I think lead by example through what I just said. Create a spacious and resilient culture, and lead by example in your own worthiness, in exhibiting your own worthiness. And most importantly, protect your organization from burnout and celebrate your wins. Celebrate and find ways for your team to feel joyful so that you can create the longevity and the resilience and the strength that you'll need as a movement to achieve these difficult goals.
What are some of the priorities for Mercy for Animals in 2024, and how can people get involved or learn more about the work that you're all doing?
Well, you can learn more about the work through our website, mercyforanimals.org. And our priorities are split into two areas. One is institutional change. So overall, we're an organization trying to change, and we're trying to end factory farming and move towards a more plant-based world where animals are respected, protected, and free. And so we do this through two ways, institutional change and culture change. And so our priorities are trying to get government and companies to either reduce suffering of animals in their supply chain or adopt plant-based options. And then the second is culture change, where we're really trying to change societal norms and values and then ultimately behaviors in the way that we eat food all of this in support of ending factory farming. And we've had some really great victories lately that we hope to build on. For example, LA County just went vegan by default, and that was through our efforts and collaborations. And we hope to build on those sorts of government institutional policies to increase plant-based eating and normalize plant-based eating throughout the country.
Thank you so much for your time, Leah.
I am glad to be here. Thanks for getting the word out.